Welcome back, everybody, to Rus Part 3. And in terms of teaching, just to be able to see where we're going, what we're doing in units, what is useful in this round is that although we're doing Perek Aleph, I've divided into three specific stages. So what we covered last week was a little more depressing. It was the death of Naomi's family and trying to understand that in context. We've moved on to the next section now, which is, if you'll take a look on page 1, there's a line between Pasuk Hey and Pasuk Vav that begins the section that we're doing today. And that marks off the area all the way till the end of Pasuk Yud Ches on page 3. This is going to be the unit we're going to try to start covering, perhaps finish covering today, about the journey back from from Stei Moav to Beis Lechem, and the drama that occurs along that journey. Okay, so just to view it in units, and the last part of the parak we'll cover at the end, which will be actually the return, entering Beis Lechem, the reception, how they treated, how things went differently to the way they were expected. So, without much further ado, we have over here, now, instead of the past, everything has been up till now, what was done, what had occurred, now it is what's actually going on, what Naomi is doing. So we start in Pasuk Vav, and this is at, as you saw, is at the very bottom of page 1. Vatokom hi v'chaloseha. So she and her daughters-in-law arise, and they get up. Vatoshav mistei Moav, and she returns from the fields of Moav, ki shamah, because she hears, bistei Moav, in the fields of Moav, ki fokad Hashem es amo loses lohem lechem. That he hears that Hashem has... Pakad literally means to, in this case, is to pay attention to a form of geula. There's a form of redemption by giving them back bread. So Beis Lechem has got the lechem back again. Sally's question was, how do we know? How did she know this?
How long after the brothers died, since then they got up?
Absolutely, we don't know too much timing. We don't know too much timing. It could be immediately afterwards. It could be a long time afterwards. It would seem, and this is just speculating, I think we perhaps would agree that it makes sense that it was pretty soon afterwards. Because if there's going to be such a bond, as we're going to see in the conversation that ensues, it must be somehow connected to... there must be some sort of connection which is very fresh. At this point in time, for the conversation to ensue, that's the only thought I'd have. Although we're not told too much more than that, so we're sort of left in the dark on that in that perspective. Things to think about. When we start thinking, this is also a new method that it's worthwhile just viewing. So came in is to view the messages of the text and then to take a step backwards and analyze. So just on a textual level, there's a few. Discrepancies over here in this first pasuk, and that is that she gets up with her daughters-in-law, but then who returns?
She returns.
Vatosa mishtei Moav ki shama ki bistei Moav ki shama bistei Moav ki pokar Hashem es amo lases lahem lechem. So they both arise, they both get up, but when it comes to the returning, who does the returning? It sounds like Naomi. Now we know they're with her. We're about to see that they're with her. But it sounds like the agenda over here is being followed by Naomi primarily. Just to view who starts and who is actually leading this session over here is clearly Naomi. And the Mamalim points this out, and she points out that there are, as we will see in the next pasuk, two motives that you could possibly pin to moving from point A to point B. Motive one is to leave point A. And motive B is to get to point B. Right? So the question is, are you moving toward or are you leaving? It's possible that they're all leaving. But it might be Naomi is the only one going. Just to pull that out in the words at this point in time. At the beginning, Naomi has a destination. She wants to return because she hears about the salvation. It could be her daughters-in-law are leaving. Why would they want to leave? Why would the daughters-in-law want to leave without necessarily there being a destination?
Well, there's no family.
Right. There's the sadness, the situation, no family. Even more, perhaps on a spiritual level, is that... What was that name?
They lost their husbands.
They lost their husbands over here. And so that's... I would say it's more than just even the sadness of it. The Gemara tells us that there are three things which change the mazel of a person's, the interaction. So one of them is shinui makom, is changing a place. In a certain sense, there's a certain aura, there's a certain flow of spiritual energy that changes in different places. So it may be that everybody's leaving because of that, but she is also going. Okay, so that's what we're hearing over here. She also has her sight on a destination, which is why... in the next pasuk, we're told, "Vateitze." This is in pasuk Zayin, starting the part of page 2. "Vateitze mina makom asher ha'isar sham." She leaves the place that she was there. "Ushtei karosei imo vateilachna baderech loshuv el Eretz Yehuda." And they walked on the way to return to Eretz Yehuda. When it comes to the end, when they start walking, the verb is now plural again. So the Malbim suggests that at the beginning. Correct. Well, at the beginning it was Vatokom hi v'chaloseha.
But the verb is still...
Absolutely, but it's referring to them as a unit in the sense then. Kishama sounds like... You're right. The verb itself at the very beginning was singular, but it includes explicitly all of them. Vatelachin is now, suddenly they're all on the same... They're all on the same wavelength, which means now that at a certain point along the journey, they weren't just leaving, but they were going. At some point in time, they became aware that this was a journey towards rather than a movement from. That's the suggestion of the Malbim within this journey, which is interesting, because there's the initial part, there's the leaving, but now suddenly the destination becomes important, not just the immigration or the exile. Again, in this pasuk, on a textual level, one has to also realize that we're being told two things. We're being told again about leaving and going. Where else in the Torah are we told about leaving and going? Leaving and going? Not by Abraham. In one specific pasuk, it says both words. Yaakov, sons of Amisa, right? Fantastic. Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva vayelech Harana. That Yaakov leaves and goes. So what we have over here is the same pasuk, the same sort of setup is Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva vayelech Harana. That Yaakov leaves and goes. Again, one has to sort of think about leaving from and going to, but there's another element to that. Rather than just in terms of intent, there's also impression. And that's what Rashi mentions over here. It's important to tell us that she left. Why? Because her leaving wasn't unnoticed. That somehow Naomi and her daughters-in-law had an impact on the society to the degree that it's not just about them going, but it's about them leaving. You know, there was a bubble. There was a vacuum left when they moved out. And one has to think about this Rashi very carefully when one contrasts it to her arrival. If she leaves such an impression as she leaves, is she making an equal or more important impact when she arrives? Maybe not. One has to juxtapose those two, if that's what the lesson has been taught. Just Ruth at the back of it, Rachel.
I'd almost think that that impact would be more personal than on community, whereas when you talk about the getting
out of
leaving, as opposed to what the community is losing out of them leaving, because there has to be an appreciation for what you have,
your loss. Correct. Correct. So, and so what I would do is I would draw that point, that on a personal level, to the return, where there is almost a lack of personal impact or impression that's going to be felt in the return, specifically on that level. To take your thought even further. Right, and more that this will be somewhat different to Yaakov in that sense. Point well taken. Rachel, what were your thoughts?
I thought it's really cool to point out that the Pasuk where it talks about Yaakov, it's Vayetze Mibar Sheva, or Vayetze probably, Mibar Sheva. There's a commentary that explains that the reason why it talks about that he left Be'er Sheva, you know, and went to, why you say from, and then to say where he's going, is obviously he's leaving, is because to show that when a tzaddik is in a city, the impact that they have on the city. And so, you know, it's just interesting that they use the same.
Absolutely. Rashi uses the same words. It says he uses the words just to It says Keshetzarik Ba'ir Ziva Hadar, and he uses these words about these. It's almost like an emanation of light. And when he leaves, Pana Hadar, Pana Ziva, everything removes. There's this vacuum. So socially, individually, but also spiritually, there's this. The city is void at this point in time. Esther, what were your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. That was unnecessary, I feel, except it's very explicit. They are leaving Israel.
Correct. And now this is the exact opposite. This is the diametric opposite. So let's take that further for just a second. Is if you're to analyze this from an emotional standpoint for a moment, and there's a fantastic sefer which I'm using in addition to others, which is I point out to a few of you, is Rav Yehoshua Bachrach has a book called Ima Shel Malchus, the mother of the kingdom. And he writes, he has a number of svarim on Sefer Shmuel, which we'll be seeing hopefully soon after this. But he points out a very interesting point. Let's just analyze it from the moment. This is not a textual analysis. This is just just thinking about it from Naomi's perspective. Think about how hard it must be for her to go back. Meaning she was the one who walked out when everybody needed her, right? Everybody needed them. And as we discussed last week, she may have been the one actually kicking and screaming, meaning she didn't want to, right? So she's walking out. She was proven, so her family, so to speak, and were proven devastatingly wrong, meaning they're coming back now without anything, and now Beis Lechem Yehuda is doing well. Imagine how hard a decision it is to go back. If you want to just put the pieces back and the emphasis returning to Yehuda. This is a very, very difficult decision she's made at this point in time. You can imagine her coming in with her head hanging low. The embarrassment of now coming back at this point in time. It's a very, very difficult situation, which now needs to play into how her daughters in law fit into that picture in her mind. So we have already just, you see, in the two very small psukim, just discussing the beginning, the outset of the journey. There's a lot of drama already just in the outset of this journey. But we continue for a moment, and that is in pasuk Ches Vatomer Naomi L'shtei Chaloseha. Naomi turns to her two daughters-in-law and says to them, Leichna Shovna Isha Leveisima. Each woman returned to her mother's house. Ya'as or Ya'aseh Hashem Imachem Chesed. Let God do with you kindness. Kasher Asisim Imameisim V'modi. As you did with the deceased and with me. Yitein Hashem Lachem Umetzena Menucha Isha Beis Isha. Hashem should give you that you should find rest. Isha Beis Isha. Each woman in her husband's house. Vatishak Lahen. And she kisses them, Vatisena Kolal Vativkena. And they raise their voices and cry out. So before we get to any analysis, just textual points, just some points to concentrate on in these two psukim, Ches and Tes, is she's describing some form of chesed that they did for her. And she said, you've done so much for me, you know what, Hashem should bless you with chesed, reciprocal. What was the chesed they did?
They were kind to their husbands.
Right, so it could be she's referring back to the years of kindness in terms of how they interacted as a family, right, on the most basic level. Chazal actually suggests that not only was it just kindness to the family, but in fact they didn't claim their rights to the ksuba. That means to say that they had the rights to claim money, but at this point in time Elimelech's family was not doing very well. They waived their rights to get that endowment of the ksuba afterwards, and also they paid for the tachrichim, for the burial garments, which is usually the responsibility of the husband's family, which means to say that they were investing and they were waiving rights on behalf of the husband. It's just this details in the background that Chazal add in over here, which contributes not only to just the past of the family relationship, which we'll focus on in a moment, but also just from a financial standpoint, there was this kindness. But on the most basic level, without even getting into the past, the Malvim suggests, and this is a very interesting point, is at this point in time, Naomi just thinks that her daughters-in-law are following her to escort her. Jesus thinks that they're escorting her. After all, why would they leave everything in their lives to come with her? She knows that they're leaving the place they were at. But following up on this, have they decided to come yet? She doesn't know. Maybe they're still escorting her. So what does she turn around? She says, you've done enough chesed with me. The mason, forget, we've discussed the mason in the past. But what about the chesed with me? You've escorted me. This is enough. Stop here. So she's at this point in time, she doesn't even think that they're necessarily following her hook, line, and sinker. This is far enough for the escort, she says to them. And their response shows her that she was mistaken. The response shows that there was something much deeper than what she expected. Tina, what do you think?
No, I think it was there because of time. The verb is plural. They never went. They're not returning to her. They didn't come from her. To me, that's a little bit of a...
Well, maybe that's the point. Maybe they haven't. Maybe in Naomi's mind, she doesn't think that they're going to be these people returning, which is why she says, thank you for the kindness. It's very emotional, but now this is your place. Return to your place and Hashem should give you menucha. That's it. This is the end. She didn't think that there was even going to be any further discussion, which is perhaps leading to what you just said. Ruth, what are you thinking?
Practically, I'm thinking she would know what their intention is because it's 10 times
Great point. Great point. I was pondering this point today, but we should also remember that they're destitute. So I wonder to what degree that there is so much to, meaning they're obviously leaving. So the daughters-in-law may be leaving because this place has got a bad aura about it. Right? It's the shinemakum shinemazel. They've packed their pots and pans, their second set of clothing, and they're on their way out. That could mean long-term, not long-term, but there's not it's not like they ordered a moving truck and they told them it's international war. I was pondering that point as well. I think there's still room for this doubt.
They're not
going to stay there. They might go to their palace, right? They might exactly. There might be something to that effect. Rachel, what are your thoughts?
I think the natural thing would be to assume that they're going to go back to their parents because when tragedy strikes, people don't usually move in with their in-laws. They usually go back to their mother.
Correct, and that's what's interesting over here. That's what's interesting is when she says, "I'm just going to." She's not going to mention it now. She's going to mention it in the next psukim about return to your mother's house. And that's sort of like, that's the paradigm which is being set up, is I'm your mother-in-law, there's your mother. There's no children. In other words, the relationship is ended, the most natural response would be to return to your mother's house, which is what she emphasizes, right? So that's going to be very much and that's perhaps what she was assuming. Why should she assume differently? Why would they be sticking with her? And certainly, a poor person who's returning to a place who she may not even be welcome, to, as opposed to daughters who grew up as princesses in the lap of luxury who still have their mother's door open for them. So just, it would make a lot of sense.
Wouldn't it generally be your father's house?
Great question. What Ruth had asked is, why is it not to their father's house? I have a suggestion on that, but let's just come to the actual psukim themselves, which describe the house of the mother. By the way, the menucha in this pasuk is referring to, Naomi blesses them with menucha, resting. Resting place means... She's blessing her daughters-in-law, not the dead. In this case, menucha. What do you think she is blessing them with? What type of menucha? Right. So the basic understanding that Ibn Ezra understands that they should be able to get remarried, meaning these are widows. Hopefully, they'll have a chance to be able to have remarriage. And it's going to be interesting to follow up where the word menucha comes back in this Megillah. Okay, so just put that on a tab, where the word menucha comes back again as a strange expression for marriage. Yeah.
But your whole subject of conversion comes to mind too. Did they convert?
Great.
When did they convert?
Did they convert? So Cynthia's question is...
If they converted, then it doesn't make sense for them. I mean, it depends how acculturated they became to the Jewish way of life.
Fantastic.
And then they can't go back to the mother because
very good point. Very good point. So we're going to come back to Cynthia's point when we have a holistic picture of all the psukim, but to what degree are they Jewish at this point in time, even before this conversation?
If they weren't converted, they may have been acculturated.
Great. So
national, whatever.
Right. They have the gefilte fish, or perhaps not. Right. We have to see. We have to see the Mefarshim debate. At this point in time, what degree of Yahadus they are part of. And well, let's use the word, what part of the Israelite nation are they part of at this point in time, rather than Judaism. So just moving on over here, just to come to back to the point that Ruth had raised about the mother's house, and this is in Pasuk Yud to Yud Gimel, just one section. The response is curt and short. By the way, stylistically, when you're writing, it's important, this is not in our place at all to critique or to give approbation to a text in Tanakh, but you just see the power over here. Naomi's just said a very long sentence. What's the response? Very short, very direct, exact. Right? It's a very powerful sentence. Ki toch nashuv lamech. That's it. No details. Vatomer Naomi, shovna benosai. Lomer telach Naomi, why do you go with me? Ha'odli vanim b'me'ai, do I have children in my womb, v'hayu lochem la'anashim, that they should be able to marry you? Shovna b'nosa lechna, please return, walk. Ki zokanti mihiyos mi'le'ish, I'm no longer able to be married to a man. Ki amarti yesh li tikva, even if I were to tell myself that I had hope. Gama yisi alala le'ish, let's say I have a relationship with a man tonight. V'gam yolalat yivonim, and let's say I had a child from that relationship. Halahen to saberna, you will be waiting and expecting. The word to saberna comes to, we say it every day, Enei kol elecha yisaberu. Yisaberu is this expectancy on the edge of your seat, waiting. Halahen to saberna, you're going to be waiting on the all the time. Ad asher yigdalu, until those children grow up. Halahen te'ogeno, you'll be tied down. You'll be limited. Levilti hiyosli ish, not to marry anybody else. Al benosai, don't my daughters, ki mar li ma'od mikem. It is very bitter from you. There's a bitterness stemming from you. Ki yotzovi yad Hashem, because the hand of God has left against me. Very sad, a very sad statement that Naomi makes. So first, just to address the point that was raised that Rachel and Ruth raised earlier, and that is that she tells them to return to the natural place that they should, which is their mother's house. Why not their father's house? Possibility, just to think about, is in those days the kings had many wives, so it would each wife would have their own palace, and so it would make a lot of sense that there are many crown princesses or princes. So if they're going to be returning, it's not necessarily to their father's house; it would be to their individual's mothers, just on a practical level. That's perhaps what the suggestion is, but also, to take it further, is just the juxtaposition. Although she's calling them her daughters out of endearment, whose daughters are they really? Their mothers, right? So she's pulling that parallel to be able to try to convince them to return to their real mother's house. She's not their real mother. That's what she's trying to emphasize over here. So just the background of this argument over here, or the major argument in Naomi's words, is the halachic concept of Yibum, right? So just to recap, the mitzvah Yibum is the following, that in Devarim Perek Chofei, Pasuk Dalet, the Torah describes a situation where you have a terrible situation where you have two brothers, one is married to a woman, and he dies. He dies, and they do not have children. The Torah explains and says, the Yavam, which is the brother, will marry the sister-in-law, and reconsecrate that relationship. The son who is born will be called by the name of the dead person. And a number of the Mepharshim point out, this means to say that there's an aspect of the neshama of the dead person which now finds channel in this child, actually. It's almost like it's not the child of the father. It's the child of the uncle, spiritually. His name should not be wiped out of Israel, referring to the uncle, the deceased.
Only the first child?
The first child, yeah. It seems like the first child, specifically. And then it talks about the chalitza if the person doesn't want to be involved. This parasha is going to be extremely significant as we carry on through the Megillah. And we're not going to discuss the details of all the halachas of it yet, because it's going to be more relevant in the fourth parak. However, think about this for a moment. You have Elimelech and a wife and two sons. Elimelech dies, his two sons die. Where's Elimelech's name going to continue? It's hanging. It's hanging. Elimelech's name at this point in time is on the cusp of destruction. So now, where could it have continued was via one of his two sons. Both are dead. What's going on over here? One of the backgrounds, which is the background themes of the Megillah, is going to be, can Elimelech find continuation? Is he totally destroyed? These young ladies, are pursuing, perhaps, what does Naomi think they're pursuing? Maybe there are other children. Maybe somehow to continue the name of the deceased husband and their deceased father-in-law. And she says, it's not worth it. It's not worth waiting. It's not worth waiting. And a point which Rabbi Foreman raises, Rabbi David Foreman, is that we're going to have to parallel many stories as we get the fuller picture. But one story which obviously relates to this is Tamar and Yehuda. Tamar was the wife of two husbands, the first two oldest children of Yehuda. They both die. Tamar wants to marry the youngest. Why does she want to marry the youngest? It's a selfless continuation of the name of the deceased. And Yehuda says to her the words, Ad asher yigdal Shela b'ni. Wait until Shela gets older. Wait until Shela gets older. Naomi uses that same word, Ad asher yigdal, and she says, don't wait. Alo halohen to saberno ad asher yigdalu. You will be waiting expectantly and be too tired down until they grow up. She's quoting the story of Yehuda to say, it's not worth it. Don't be the Tamar in this incident. That's what Naomi's framing as she makes this argument to her daughters-in-law. And it's going to get more as we see the greater parallel. But at this point in time, we're on the text and just getting the details as we go through. So this is the argument that Naomi presents. And also, think about this for just a moment. This is a very fascinating point to think about. She says in the last sentence in Pasuk Gimel, Ki mar li ma'od mikem. It is very bitter from you. Something about the daughters-in-law is creating a bitterness in her life. What could be creating this bitterness? What could be hurting her? So it could be she's thinking about the fact that there's all this loss. It could have been saved, perhaps. I had not thought about that. Correct, meaning the situation. It's the tragedy of the situation in and of itself, right? It could also be is the very fact that they want to put themselves in this position embitters her as well. If you think about it, from her perspective, her family has caused a lot of distress to these women. If they're going to wait and their lives are going to dry up because of waiting, that's going to make it even worse for it. It'll be rubbing the salt into the wounds of how much it's hurting. And perhaps as a last suggestion, this is where Rav Bachrach points out in Medrash, that when she sees her daughters-in-law, she sees her sons. Just to think about that as well. Kimar li mikem, every time she looks at them, she sees her sons. And so when she says to them, I want you to go back, she says, I can't bear living in this family. It's too difficult for me to be able to see you and see them. So that relates back to the tragedy of what it was as well. Do you know what you're saying? I need to look into that further. One of the parallels that we'll be dealing with, either next week or the week afterwards, will be the parallel of to Eov, and we're going to see expressions like that there. Okay, so and it's important to bear that in mind, that as we think about this, is that Naomi has been through a lot of suffering, and so when she uses these words, she uses them very heavily. And we're going to have to see other people in Tanakh use that. So one that comes to mind is Eov, but I need to get the specific words. But this is Eov-esque in that sense.
Anybody that's gone through the Shoah has used those words about their lives and how they feel.
Correct.
Because I remember my mother using those kind of words.
Correct. 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 So this is
gone.
Correct. 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 Correct.
So then that's
correct. Correct. It might be, but although there's bitterness over here, it's the bitterness directed somehow in relationship to her daughters-in-law. So that's meaning she's not just saying I'm angry. She's going to say, she does say, Ki yatza bi yad Hashem, the hand of God has left against me. That might be the point that you're mentioning. But the bitterness is somehow attached to the daughters-in-law, either because of what they're trying to do, because of the past, or because of just what they remind her. That's the subtlety of this point here.
Was she happy when her sons married these women?
We don't know. We don't know at all.
Maybe she was,
we don't know.
Situation.
I hear where you're going. I hear where you're going, Dina. I don't know. I don't know about that. It does seem like. By the way, it does. I would hesitate to make such a suggestion. For the reason being, is that she calls them Benosai, my daughters. She's very concerned for them. Meaning, at this point in time, it sounds like she's very caring and she wants for the best for them. When she makes a suggestion, so I wouldn't necessarily put in any we'll call it external strife in here. From the conversation and the dearness in which they treat each other.
Do you think they were married before Elimelech died?
It doesn't sound like it. It sounds like Elimelech dies and then they get married, which would lead us to question what was going on. What did Naomi really think when they got married? Were they Jewish? Which comes back to Cynthia. There might have been that tension. But coming back to Cynthia, we have to think about what happened at the beginning, which we'll get to in just a moment, time permitting. So over here as well, this is there is also an Ibn Ezra who makes the comment over here, and this is something which you have to think about all the way through, is that the mitzvah of Yibum is technically the mitzvah on whom? The mitzvah who is obliged to perform Yibum? Is the brother. The brother of the deceased, or the brother-in-law of the wife. That is the person who is obliged to. In this case, although she is saying, she's arguing that there's not going to be any further brothers. That's what she's arguing. We're going to see later on that maybe it's going to be extended to further and more distant relatives, which leads the Ibn Ezra to suggest that this is not even Yibun in its technical sense. This is more of a sense of endearance, a sense of dedication and loyalty, which takes this feeling to even a greater level. This is not even part of the command of what the Torah is talking from the Ibn Ezra's perspective, or others will argue. It's even more. It's above and beyond even the requirements of Yibun, which just, you need to have that in the back of our minds as we understand the extent that Rus is going to extend herself for this, even beyond the necessary mitzvah. So now we have the response. Naomi's put down a second argument. What's the response of the daughters-in-law? The first response in Pasuk Yudalet to Tesvav is, Vatisena kolam vatifkena od. They raise their voices and they cry. Vatishak Orpah lechamosa v'rus dov kobo. So Orpah kisses her mother-in-law and Rus cleaves to her. Vatomer hinei shava yimtech alamo v'el Eloheha. Shuvi achare yimtech. And Naomi now presents another argument. Return after your sister, to your people. Yivim Teich, the word of here is used as the potential Yavam, the person who could have been that Yavama. She has returned to her people and her gods. Return after her. So she presents the next argument. What is interesting is that it's almost like Orpah is returning the kiss she received. Just to think about that. Naomi gave them both a kiss when she wished them well and to leave. What happens? Orpah returns that kiss. It's interesting. It's almost like she's distancing. There is definitely a sense of closeness, but it's like she's returning that gesture to Naomi as she leaves. Perhaps next week, we have at the end, we'll be able to discuss Orpah in greater depth. I know that Esther a few weeks ago mentioned the outcome of Orpah and we have to understand her intents. Not for now, that requires a little bit more of its own topic. Fine. So Naomi makes this argument. She says, "Your sister has returned now to her people, to her gods. It's your place as well."
Isn't that interesting to her gods? Have they converted?
Right.
Have they converted? It would be our God.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, you could argue this two ways, which the Mephoshim do right here. This is, again, a hot spot, which Sally's picking up on, is that At this point, it could be revert. Revert back. This is going to be regression.
Right.
Or no. Or just simply go back naturally to who you're attached to now. Well, one can analyze that in two ways in the conversation, which is a very good point. And that's what the Mefarshim do as we travel through this.
She's sending them back.
Yes.
She's sending them back. That means this is Moab. She's making them stay. It's Moab.
One is Moab, the other is not.
No. My question is, how many Yehudi were in Moab?
There weren't any.
These were the handful of Yehudi. So therefore, if she's telling them to stay, automatically she has cut them off from
Yes and no. One would wonder, and this is something you have to ponder, is wouldn't Ruth just be happy serving God in the way, let's say, even through Yahadus, even through Judaism, in her place? Why does she need to go with? One can question that. I'm not presenting an answer, but I don't know. You're making a very good argument that that in a certain sense she is cutting the only bridge they may have or connection. One question, maybe I don't know. Could she fathom them living by themselves? I don't know. It seems like that it's more directed towards your suggestion that she says to Ruth, "Look, Orpah has returned to her gods." Meaning, once you go back there, that's it. That's what it sounds like. Anyways, but to be considered a little further, I want to get to the end of the psukim to pull those points together. Okay, so just to end this conversation, the conversation ends. Three psukim from here, which is Vatame Rus Altifki Ebi Lozvech Loshuv Meachorayach. Don't, hard word to translate, but do not continue almost putting pressure, entreating me anymore to leave Loshuv Meachorayach, to leave from behind you. And then the famous words of the Megillah, Ki Elam Asher Telchi Eilech, where you walk, I will walk. Vasher Talini Alin, where you will dwell, where you will sleep, I will sleep. Amech ami, your people is my people, velokayech elokai, and your God is my God. Ba'asher tamusi amus, where you will die, I will die, v'sham ekover, and there I will be buried. Ko yosef ya'aseh Hashem li, so should God do to me, v'ko yosef, and so he should continue doing. That is the expression of a shvur. She's putting emphasis on her words by evoking the name of God on what she's just said. Ki amoves yafid b'ni v'nech, that death, only death, will separate the two of us. Vateire ki misametzesi loleches itach, vatechdal ledaber eileha. And Naomi, seeing that she was pushing very hard to be able to go with her, stopped speaking to her, and then continue. And that's the end of the conversation of conversion over here. Now, just a few points, just to pull a few things together over here. When looking at this list of expressions, these list of dedications that Rus says towards her mother-in-law, there's walking, there's sleeping, there's people, God, and death. Right? Those are five things she says, and there's kvura and burial afterwards. It is worthwhile noting that Rashi understands that in fact this is the point of Geirus, and in Geirus you tell a person a number of the important things which are pertaining, we'll call a smorgasbord of different things that will affect you as being a Jew, because you cannot possibly give a person the entire gamut. So Rashi says over here, if you just wouldn't mind turning to source 3, it's on page 7, under Ruth's conversion. Rashi understands that the particular things that she says relate to areas of halacha that she's being, that Naomi was speaking to. So the bottom of page 7, the very last paragraph in source 3, which is Rashi, Ki el asher telchi eilech. Mikan amru rabuseinu. Our sages taught from and learned from here, Ki ger shebol hiskayer moedi'in lo miktsas onshim. That a ger who wants to convert, a potential convert, you tell them a number of the severe punishments, she'im bo lachzor boy yachzor. That this may be a point of reconsidering, that maybe this is the point now that they should consider if they should go back. Shemitoch devarim shel Rus ata lomed sheamra lo Naomi asola, because you learn from Rus's words what Naomi had actually said to her prior. Sheamra lo Naomi. Naomi had told her asur lo lotzeis chutz letchum b'shabbos. She says, look, there's going to be very unusual things that you're going to have to encounter as a Jew. is there certain restrictions where you walk even on Shabbos. We're not so accustomed to this because we live in the city limits. If you live in a small town, you can't necessarily take a walk outside the limits of that town for about a mile beyond the sides of that town. So what's the response? Ba'asher tel chiyalech. I will have the same curtailing. I will limit my walking in the same way that you do. You know that up till now you may not be used to this, but you can't just, a female or male can't just spend time together without anybody else being there in a locked room. So this is the Isser Yichud. Amralah, Bashir Talini Alin. I will dwell in the same way that you dwell, meaning I will abide by those same laws. She says, we got all these commandments, the 613 commandments on our back. Amechami, your nation is mine, says Rus, I adopt these. It's almost like the Midrash is putting in conversation parts of what Rus is responding to every time Naomi says something. We cannot serve deities. Elokei chelokei. Your God is my God, she responds. Arba misas nimsur lebeistin. And, you know, if you do something wrong, there are four capital punishments. Ba'asher tamusi amus. I will abide by those capital punishments. Shnei kvorim nimsur lebeistin. Echad niskolim v'nisrofim v'echad neirogim v'nechnakim. Even she says that if you are put into a capital punishment, you may not be buried in the same place as even people with a different capital punishment. The people who there's four different ways of being killed, and the response is Amralah v'sham ekover. There I will be buried. So she adopts this. Within this conversation, we understand the what Chazal are doing over here is that Rus is responding to a number of stringencies which are being presented to her, and she's saying I adopt them all these different. The different parts of the spectrum, learning out Hilchus Geirus from here. But the Malbim, and with this we'll end, suggests a more simple point, is over here she's accepting not specific mitzvahs, no other conversation going on, just the basics, we'll call them the Ikarim, the foundations of Judaism. She accepts it as a God. She accepts that there's going to be Schar V'onish, reward and punishment in the future. She understands that there is the existence of Hashem's unity, and the Torah and the Minhagim, Amech Ami. The way he sees it over here is just simply accepting the foundations. More than specifics, as Chazal putting into over here, just the very basics, foundations of faith, which are showing that her dedication to Naomi and her cause. What we'll have to investigate next time as we start is the following. Number one is that Rashi and the Malbim are assuming that this is the point of conversion. Is that true? That means to say that this is the point where she's proving that she's really a Gioris from the conversation we just had from the Malbim and Rashi. Not everybody agrees with that. Because the question we're going to have to deal with is, so how could they marry them? Did they just marry them? How was Naomi accepting of that then? Number two is a very important point, and that is that Rus has known a sum total of four Jewish people in her life. Three of them died as a punishment, but she still sticks with Naomi. What is it that she has seen that pulls her so far along that she's so dedicated to this cause? 75% of the world that she knew as Judaism aren't around anymore. And somehow she's still dedicated. That's what we're going to have to start with next time. Thank you very much.